Thanks for coming this afternoon. This is certainly an important topic. From the bank's perspective, it caused a lot of equity problems throughout the world. You saw that Melvina showed the problem. Now, I'm asked to talk about the source country perspective of this. Now, you would probably expect somebody else talking about the Caribbean than myself. But I think there are at least three reasons for this. First, I'm also a health migrant. I'm trained in Germany, but now changing countries every 3 years. And I've been working for more than 10 years in the Caribbean, inclusive the work on health labor in the region. Now, let me take you quickly through the challenges and opportunities that the region faces. Now, just background, you know where the Caribbean is. Countries cooperate under the Caribbean Community, and they're moving towards what's called the Caribbean Single Market Economy. The most important thing to remember here is that this implies free movement of labor among those countries. That has yet to be implemented, but some countries are experimenting with changing the local legislation. Now, our study was prompted by a request by several ministers of health. They were concerned about anecdotal evidence about shortages and high migration rates. This dates back to 2007. So what we tried since then is to draw a very comprehensive picture, not only about the nurse labor market, but also the nurse education market in those countries. Our study focus was on the five countries here to the right to the bottom, but that represents roughly 85% of the population in this region. Oh, this is actually not my slide. Okay. Let's talk about the challenges. The biggest challenge we faced, there are no data. When we started in 2007 to work on this, we couldn't find any data, and it took us 3 years to gather this together. Ministries of health don't have a base to do that. We worked with nurse councils, with nurse associations, with schools. We worked with healthcare providers to patch this picture, a comprehensive picture together. Again, it took us 3 years. By the time we had it probably together, it was outdated to draw strong policy conclusions. What you see here is simply from one of the countries, the data that are available from exit interviews from nurses. So roughly 70% that in these kind of basically public healthcare systems, for 70% of the nurses that leave the country doesn't know what happens to them. Now, what is the biggest challenge in the region? What you see is we estimated the growing demand for nurses using some models, adapting them from Canada, and you see that the demand in the region will increase significantly here from below 12,000 to up to 18,000. What I want to focus today on is what is this kind of health nurse shortage in the region, and then mainly focusing on what happens actually on the supply side. Now, this is the situation in the region. Just in terms of the gross figures, roughly 8,000 nurses are actively working in those countries, but they have 2,700 vacancies. This is roughly 25%. Now, if you look a little bit closer at this, here we have the nurse population ratios for the different countries, Guyana, Jamaica, St. Lucia, St. Vincent, Grenadines, Trinidad, Tobago, and CARICOM. What you see is the vacancies are those in orange. They vary very much across the countries. And we only estimate the vacancies on the basis of unfilled public spots in the system. That doesn't reflect actually the needs that exist, like in countries like Guyana, to come to a reasonable nurse population ratio. The other very concerning factor is that only 12% of the nurses are currently employed at the primary care level. So that means roughly 80% are at the secondary and tertiary care level, and another 8% in administrative services. But 30% of the vacancies are at the primary care level. Now, thinking about a region that suffers heavily from non-communicable diseases and needs to shift to a new service delivery model that really reaches out to households and introduce behavior change, communication, and other methods, this is certainly insufficient to respond to this challenge. Now, let me talk quickly about this supply equilibrium that I mentioned before. Now, if you look, the region does at the time we did the study, actually pretty well. You see increments 9.7%, attrition rates 8% of the population. Now, the first worrying thing is attrition rates of 8%. That is stunning in comparison, to, for example, to EU countries. Now, normally what you see through retirement disability, pretty much in the trend, 2%. But the region in this period left 6% of its nurses every year just to emigration. Now, they compensate for this through education policies, and I will look into this a little bit as an opportunity, and certain inflows of nurses into the region. But this is a very fragile supply equilibrium, and you will see that in a second. What we looked at historically, what were the outflows of the region to the United States and Canada? Unfortunately, we didn't have data for the UK. What you see is, remember what I showed before in terms of the outflows? Here we see peaks of outflows per year in the history, just to the US, of 1,200, 1,400 nurses per year. The total stock in the region is below 8,000. Same for Canada. So we try to correlate this kind of outflows from the region with what happens in the countries and in the source and destination countries. And the only factor that explains this variation are the immigration policies in the United States and Canada. So it's basically, it looks pretty much outside the control of the countries, of the source countries, and data like this would mean today, historical data mean in the future that the nurse stock in the region can be depleted in 4 to 5 years completely. So it all depends on immigration policies abroad. Now, why is this so interesting? We did a survey among nurse graduates from Jamaica. 81% of those who didn't migrate considered migration. 75% are dissatisfied with the work conditions in Jamaica. And another 53%, so half of them, say, look, guys, the only reason why we don't migrate is because we don't know how it works. And that is a barrier that can become overcome very easily. So there's a tremendous risk in terms of the stock that exists in the region. Now, these flows I showed them to you before here, they have resulted in a picture where this is the stock in the CARICOM, and the stock abroad, and remember the data that Malvina showed, it's roughly three times the stock that is left in the Caribbean. So these were all nurses that were trained there and left. So this is an unprecedented figure. Normally you see something in the range of 50% of source countries. Here this is three times the amount that's left in the region. Finally, on migration, a comment, I mentioned that before, the countries are moving towards a single market economy through movement of labor. So just to gauge a little bit what could happen in the region, we just looked at what are the nurse outflows to the United States. The data allow us to do that, compared to domestic supply, and compare that with the hourly salaries in these countries. So what you see here, for example, this is Barbados. 80%, the nurse in Barbados earn roughly 80% of what the nurse in the US earn, and then you have very low outflow rates. But in Guyana, they earn 35% what a US nurse earns, and so there are significantly higher outflows. Roughly 5.5% of the stock of Guyana leaves every year. So if this holds true also for the region, and we know this, then there's a tremendous potential if the region moves towards free movement of labor in terms of intra-regional migration. And we know that all countries suffer shortages right now. The only thing that prevented this from being implemented right now is the global economic crisis, where countries didn't move to free movement of labor to protect the labor forces at home. But this is just a matter of time. Now, a few good news from the region. First, there seems to be some sort of effective initial retention of the nurses that are trained there. After 5 years, you roughly see 100% of the nurses still there. Again, we looked at historical flows. But what you see is after 15 years, roughly half of the nurses have left the region. And after 20 years, it's roughly down to 20%. So 4 out of 5 have left the region after 20 years. But again, the good news is, at least in the beginning, they stay. Now then, there's also good news in terms of the regional training capacity that could be boosted. The first good news is here, what you see in the figure is that currently the nurse schools only accept roughly 35% of qualified applicants. So there's tremendous demand for nursing in the region. Now the problem starts here. If you see from accepted applicants to graduates, the region leaves more than 40% of their nurses during the training. So that is something that could be easily boosted and fixed. We know how, what to do there. The other good news is here, there's a lot of not only demand for nurse education, a lot of training capacities in the region, not necessarily in every country, but combined that could be fixed. The big challenge is that the region elects nurse tutors to improve the quality and the retention in the program, but also to boost the training. But again, there could be very smart solutions to fix this, so drawing on the diaspora abroad, etc. There seems to be demand for this. Okay, two more thoughts on this. Why is this so unequal? We looked at the left table here. We estimate the cost of training a nurse in Jamaica is roughly $20,000 US equivalent. Now, who benefits from this? It's in the first place the student. This is an average nurse, in terms of the migration patterns. That's roughly their salary that they earn. But then the destination countries for each nurse that graduates there saves these kind of costs of training given the current patterns of migration. So that is a very unequal distribution of the costs and the benefits. And that calls actually for a change in the policy of how nursing is financed or nurse training is financed. Currently the governments primarily finance it themselves. So the nurses should contribute and probably the destination countries. There's the willingness of those countries to consider this. And again, here in terms of the students that are the greatest benefiter from those programs, there is actually a willingness to pay. We tested that among graduates, and those who are still practicing in Jamaica, they are willing to make a significant contribution to their training, and those who migrated to the US, even higher. You see the numbers here. That depends all whether they have access to the student loans or not. So where are we now in the policy debate in the region? The good news is also that the countries in the CARICOM agreed that there are three priorities. The first one is to improve the monitoring of the flows and the workforce itself, that they want to expand and strengthen the training capacities to get better output, better graduation rates, improve further the quality, and also invest into nurse education to expand the numbers of nurses trained there. And there's a general agreement that they have to look into how to better manage migration. Then there's also broad consensus about the process. The most important thing is that it's going to be a regional effort. These countries are so small they can't deal with it by themselves. They agree that it should be swift, comprehensive, addressing these three issues, and again, multi-sectoral. I think one of our strengths of our study was that we not only looked at the labor market, but also at the education market. Where are we right now? I think after having done this kind of panorama, the greatest concern of those stakeholders in the region was that they have any kind of liabilities under international agreements that would stop them from moving ahead. So we collaborated with Georgetown University in this exercise, and we looked into actually what are the legal implications of moving with a legal instrument forward, and there's actually good news. First is they have no commitments under international agreements currently that would stop them on addressing any of those issues that I mentioned that relates to the monitoring, managing migration, and working on education. And if they would move forward with a legal instrument, they actually could actually shape some of these agreements that have poorly been implemented, that is the Global Agreement of Trade and Services, as well as the Caribbean Single Market Economy. There, for the time being under the letter, there are no rulings to health labor. And finally, and I think that's the link to the next presentation, it could provide much more granularity to those agreements that they signed off at the global level, in particular the Global Code of Practice. Again, it's a very important topic, and the region really has taken this on right now, to the ministers of health and their council. They want to move forward. Thanks so much.